Good evening, one and all. I know, over halfway through March, and weather's chop change here where I'm on the eastern coast in Connecticut. We've had a bit of snow, and then we've had lots of rain, and we've had almost a bit of spring. Daffodils are starting to come off, so they've come up, so it's pretty good. But I am here, and so is my guest. Now, one of the things that's come up on shows in the past is, you know, about fact actually being stranger quite often than fiction. And we always bring up, well, I always bring up, you look at Star Trek, for instance, and how far-fetched it was when it came along. But then you look at the stuff that they had in Star Trek, and now it's most of it's pretty common. The sliding doors. Nearly every supermarket, library, or what have you's got sliding doors. Communicators, mobile phones. Captain's log, a tablet. And as we've heard, I think a couple of years ago, they're actually working on transporters systems, perhaps for goods and that, not for humans like that, but it is like that. Well, my guest today, he's used his experience and brought it into a sort of science fantasy, a science fiction type thing. I'm going to let him explain about it because he's lost me just by going through the titles of it and everything. But I better introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Paul Vachette. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Hello, thank you for having me here. I'm doing well, thank you.
That's good. As I say, you know, you look at some of the stuff that was or is written down in fantasies and fictions and everything like that, and then you think, hang on, is that far-fetched? And lo and behold, you know, a little while longer, it isn't. And you've used your own experience about things and sort of brought it into this fiction type stuff, but it's actually based in a way a lot on your own sort of experiences and your own knowledge. Is that right?
That's correct. I decided to write the book after having some experiences when I was in the Air Force, and then understanding that there were some information in the Bible that was being misinterpreted. But what really set things going is meeting psychics that would tell me that I had a role to play, and getting into meditation, and then through meditation having out-of-body experiences, revealing the secrets that explain our existence, our relationship with the rest of the universe, the reason why we are here, what is the role of the planet, and the link actually between extraterrestrial phenomenon and spirituality.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot. I've had quite a few people who've been told they had to write a book, or they something, some spirit, some guide, whatever, has come along and said, you know, we've got this task for you. You need to communicate. You need to share with what's happening. Was that how it came to you? Was it just a case of you started meeting these guides and the spiritual things and people, etc., and you, through that, you then learned that there was, you know, that something was there for you to do and you had to do it?
Yeah, you're pretty close. The book is actually could be a autobiography. So I guide the reader how the main character, who is me, became a UFO researcher, and then later on in the plot, the things that happened to me spiritually happens to him. So he goes on both a physical journey across the country, and it becomes also a spiritual journey. So the thing that started for me really was being brought up in a Catholic household, and I was in Catholic school for 8 years. Throughout those 8 years, I had a high level of critical thinking that just made me think that the things that they were teaching us, that I just wasn't comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. However, I was probably only the only child that really felt a connection when they were describing the passages about Jesus's suffering. I mean, I actually felt ill, and I felt you know, like the pain that you probably.
So you were sharing, yeah.
So with that critical thinking, I sought other things to think about, to believe, and that was science, starting with the Mercury program, the Gemini program, the Apollo program. We were watching it on TV in our house, in our homes. That set me into thinking about outer space, and then reading about science fiction and science fiction novels that have to do with outer space. And so that was the beginning. When I was in high school, I accidentally heard a show that had Eric Von Däniken on it, and he was explaining a passage in the Bible, in the book of Ezekiel, where it's misinterpreted about what Ezekiel is describing, where he actually had contact with advanced beings, and they allowed him to go on the craft instead of what a lot of the people that are religious think, that it was about God.
Yep.
And sure enough, the next day I went into high school, and I looked up in the Bible, and all of the words that were described by Von Däniken were there. So fast forward to me becoming an officer in the Air Force. After getting my degree in architecture, I sought to become an officer in the Air Force. And one of my duties, stations, was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is the cradle of research and development in the Air Force. The specific facility that I was to be a construction manager on was Foreign Technology Division. And that building was a two-story warehouse-type building, no windows. There were motion detectors all around the lawn. And then if you were even having a top-secret clearance, you were escorted around. As you go through double doors that were locked, there was a corridor that could fit three golf carts abreast. And there were no numbers on doors, no names on the doors. There was no directory. Everything was white. And whoever was in one office did not know what was going on in the next office because it was compartmented. My project was on the second floor, and it was a computer system. And, you know, in the 80s, computers were much larger, so they needed a
yes.
lot of space.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I went and make sure that there was no possible claim by the contractor for a change order based on differing site conditions. So one of the things that I needed to do was look at the drawings. They're called as-built drawings, and what they do is they describe, illustrate the condition of the facility prior to construction. So I was thumbing through the drawings, and I noticed that there was a floor plan that was labeled basement. Well, warehouses are not constructed with basements. That's uneconomical.
Mm-hmm.
So I checked the footprint or the outline and matched it with the outline of the building. And sure enough, obviously, the building had a basement. Going through some more sheets, I see that there's a floor plan for a cryogenic chamber measuring 70 by 90 feet. And I thought, wow, there's something...
Wow.
Very sensitive here that should not be here.
Right.
And, yeah, and you see, Foreign Technology Division is a very hush-hush kind of organization where what they do is they evaluate weapon systems, they look at their weaknesses and their strengths, and they come up with ideas to fight them and then pass them on across the base to where they do the actual research and development. So it made sense for this facility to be in Foreign Technology Division. And then much later on, as I read Phil Korsel's book, The Day After Roswell, he was the officer in charge of the recovery of the craft and the recovery of the cadavers at Roswell, he mentions Wright-Patterson Air Force Base as the depository for the cadavers. So that matched.
Yeah. Now, obviously, go ahead. No, please go ahead.
Yeah. So those were two big, what I saw, points in my timeline that impacted my beliefs. Understanding that there were things that were being withheld from us, understanding that there were things that were misinterpreted, and just having a general curiosity. And with that, I started to become, looking into things that people didn't know about, going into all kinds of theories about, for instance, the pharmaceuticals, the gas companies, and the energy inventions and things like that. And with that, I started to meet all of these people, and a lot of people, after talking to them, had experiences with contact or were abducted or had implants. And I set up a group called Spirits and Healing in the Facebook group, and there were as many as 300 people there, because they were ostracized or they were isolated from people because of what they were saying that happened to them. But once I put them in the group, they started to match, and they started to compare their stories, and it became a support group for them. And with that, I also started to meet a lot of psychic women, and one by one, they would tell me I had a role to play. They wouldn't go any further, but they said I had a role to play. And it's only when I met a woman who was a psychic who actually was acting as a medium for an extraterrestrial race that would connect to me through her, that I was told that I was to be a counselor and informer. And that's when I decided to think about writing.
Now the whole business of these almost like a universal community and stuff like that, are people from Earth, are we too primitive? Would we fit in with these other people? I mean, I know, we all know we only use a fraction of everything we got, and our brains onward sort of thing, but are they hoping that with your guidance we can sort of make our way to take our place in the spiritual universe, for want of a better word?
That's not far from what is happening. Go back to when we dropped the bombs on Hiroshima. That was like a fire alarm throughout the universe. Why? Because we had technology that we were not spiritually prepared for. We didn't have the responsibility. We didn't have the ethics. And it was a very major concern also because our scientists at that time didn't understand that immense amount of energy expended actually affected other dimensions. So that's why you had such a spike in sightings after we dropped the bombs.
Yeah.
And they would go to places that we would experiment with nuclear technology, and they would always go in and be sighted there. So the reason that they're concerned is that we're spiritually corrupt. We have our DNA, which is actually our original sin, not what the Bible says. Our DNA is our original sin, which is why we can't change it. That makes us barbaric, violent, having an irrational obsession with possessions, being racist to the point of genocidal on our own in mass murders. They're concerned about that. When you combine that with our intelligence, that makes us the most dangerous species in the universe.
Right. What about, I was reading something about the karma. You say karma plays an important part in our lives. How does that affect us?
Okay, so karma is should not be seen as something that is instantaneous or applied in the lifetime in which we have the act. what happens, the community, the universal community, is concerned about us and Earth, because Earth is actually a school for our spirits. Our spirits are energy. The spirits are linked to us by our receptor in our brain, which is called the pineal gland. And it's through the human that they learn about love, about pain, suffering, about creativity, beauty, all the things that we experience as humans, the spirits can't experience because they're energy. But linking to us, they have that ability. So this is a kindergarten for our spirits. And what happens is that if we learn the lesson, then when we pass, we go to a place, and I saw this in one of my meditations, we go to a place that the spirit links with all other spirits. They download their previous life, and then based on that life, they upload what they have to experience for the next life in order to complete the lesson if they have not learned it.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yep. I understand. Yeah. Interesting. The whole business, obviously, we're being monitored, whichever way, how, and when, what's going on, but from our spirits or other spirits, what you want to call them, around the universe and beyond. Does that not just put ourselves at risk, but that must, with your disclosures and everything, that you must be at risk a bit there?
All right, so you know X-Files, right? You know, X-Files is allowed to continue. Why? Because they mix in hoax with truth. And the layperson, the common citizen, can't tell the difference between hoax and truth.
Right.
The same can be applied for anyone, especially in this internet age. The people that are watching, that are concerned about information, they really aren't concerned about information. They want as much information out there as possible to confuse the public.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
They don't even recognize, you know, it used to be that they denied, but they don't even recognize anymore.
Now, you self-published your first book, Disclosure Paradox, and then the second book, was that almost like a prequel, or was that just an amendment to the first? How did the second one came along?
Well, the first one, again, you know, it's based on myself as the main character, and all the characters in it are based on real people. All the events are based on real events, except for a few that I've added to make it entertaining. But one of the characters that I found very interesting and willing to talk to me about her experiences, I set her up as a prequel to the first book. So the second book is called What Doesn't Kill Her, and it's about a woman that, you know, she's abducted by extraterrestrials. They put an implant in her. She has the ability to recognize energy waves with her mind, just like objects are recognized, you know, sonar recognizes objects in water. It's the same kind of thing. And she's actually able to repel the energy back to the source and cause fires, explosions, and things like that. So that was the prequel. And so those two were self-published.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened was that a former Benedictine monk searched on Google extraterrestrials and spirituality, and he found my first book, and he loved it. And then he friended me, and he said, you know what's missing in this book, he said, is the Shroud of Turin. He turned out to be a prominent researcher on the Shroud of Turin. In fact, he sent me hundreds of documents of research papers from all over the world on every aspect of the Shroud that authenticated it. And I started reading it. And mind you, did not intend to write a third book because my first two books were essentially flops as far as popularity. So I thought maybe this is not what I need to do. However, I found it very interesting, and I sent him an outline. He liked it. Then I sent him a manuscript after 6 months, and not only did he like it, but he's written the foreword for this book. And the book is, again, about the Shroud. It's a conspiracy to destroy the Shroud of Turin, and it's a sequel to the first book because it kind of closes some things up.
Ah, okay.
And that was the book. That was the book that got the attention of the literary world. And when they found out that I had two other books that I did in the series, they wanted all three of them. And that's how we got to where we are, where I re-released the first one in a much better condition.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, and then you hear this, people like Steve Berry, for instance. He got 10 books rejected before he got his first book, and then he was able to use his 10 previous rejections to make other stories and stuff like that, as he comes on the show and tells us. Paul, is there any hope for us?
All right. I think it's going to take a generation for us to be able to get to the point where we are once again joined with the rest of the universal community, because we need to change fundamentally. Mm. You know, we have a lot of technology, but we are low in spirituality. And when a race is like that, there's a great propensity for self-eradication. When you have higher spirituality and lower technology, there's a greater chance of being assimilated by a more advanced race. The ones that you see that are part of the universal community, they've been around for a long time. They've evolved. They've been around and allowed to evolve because their balance between spirituality and technology is almost level.
Right. So there's a lot of work to go here.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Now you've got, you know, obviously you said you sort of become a lot more listened to with your other books and stuff like that. Is there something else you're planning? You know, is there some sort of follow up you've sort of want to share with people in a form of a fourth book?
Yes, sir. The fourth book possibly is going to be called Forbidden. And that will be related to what we learned, where the detonations of nuclear fission would be has so much energy that it actually affects other dimensions. Now our scientists know that now, and my hypothesis is that that's what the Hadron Collider is about. It's not about what they're telling us. I think they're actually trying to control breaking into another dimension.
Ah, okay. Interesting. And that's a whole nother theory and thoughts and everything like that when you sort of come across it. But this is the thing. Are you still... You know, do people still communicate with you if you've got regular people?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I've got quite a following. You know, I work with about 400 people in my office, with the government, and a lot of people support me. They know that I'm very level-headed. Obviously, with the position that I'm in, you know, I'm managing the design of a $16 billion program.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have to be somewhat sane. Right?
Yeah. Well, possibly, yeah. Not sure this day and age, but yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, it's fascinating chatting to you. And when I have guests like yourself on the show, it just makes you think. And the more you think, the more the possibilities are, and the more I think people become, open to such things, but that's why it's so good, and why I love doing these shows. But time is beating us, so Paul, I'm going to hand the show over to you, so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you, and of course about your books. So over to you.
All right. My website, which is a wonderfully designed website by Blue Gorilla, is thedisclosureparadox.com, all one word. And there you can read excerpts from chapters, you can read the character descriptions, the preface that guides the plot, reviews that were done prior to publication by subject matter.
Okay, well, that's you there, Paul? Dang, we were doing so good until then, weren't we? But looks like I lost him. So what we're going to do anyway, as he was just saying, the disclosureparadox.com, and all sorts of stuff there, bits from the book, etc., as he was saying. And really good. And I really enjoyed having Paul on the show and listening to him. Lots of stuff to make you think. Lots of stuff that we need to think about. Anyway, that's it for now. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, I have one thing left to say. Don't forget.